have to say is you guys are incredible, absolute fierce competitors, and this never gets old. Let's go!
Q's got this squad into the ALDS. Of course, you can hear the game this Saturday night on 96.5 The Fan as they open up their series in the Bronx. Vern's on deck show on Saturday as well. And we welcome in our Royals insider, Josh Fernier. I was listening. You were on, 9:30 or so last night. I feel like you could have stayed on the air till midnight and people would have still been calling in, man.
I planned on it. I was down to stay on, but we got the hook a little late. So we had a good time last night, hoping that the good times continue to roll.
This bullpen, it's almost funny to think about how we talked about them throughout much of the season. I know it's a different group of guys than the last time they played the Yankees, and certainly even at the beginning of August. But to now look at them as one of the biggest reasons, if not the reason why they were able to have the success they did in this series against Baltimore, it's pretty remarkable, the turnaround here.
Yeah, you look at the last 19 games, an ERA around 1.5. The first 147 games, an ERA around 4.5. So a 3-run drop in the team's ERA just in the last 3 weeks when it comes to that bullpen. And of course, it is just a bunch of different faces that weren't there in April and May and June, started to show up in July, and now are all oozing with confidence. I mean, Angel Zerpa's going so right now. He strikes a dude out while breaking the guy's hand. Zerpa, Schreiber, Long, I mean, whoever comes out of that bullpen, you feel good about. And obviously, Matt Quatrero does as well, because the guys are coming into spots. Listen, I'm not saying that I was cheering on Q's decision to pull Seth Lugo. And I understand that in the fourth inning, he was leaving some fastballs up, and he did it again to Cedric Mullins in the fifth. But, you know, I've said it countless times on this show, I'm riding with these starting pitchers the third time through the lineup before I trust anybody outside of Lucas Ursek in that bullpen. And that's even with the evidence of Long and Bubich, Zerpa, Schreiber, and the rest. I'm still Team Reagans, Team Waka, Team Seth Lugo.
Same.
So Q put himself out there by bringing Zerpa into that bases-loaded spot with only one out. Great job by Zerpa. He gets out of it, and yeah, Q looks like a genius, but man, and he is doing a great job, him and his coaching staff, but it's about execution, right? Q wasn't an idiot in April and May. He's not a genius now. His players are just flat out executing in all phases, not just the bullpen, but the little things at the dish, on the base paths, defensively. Man, if this bullpen keeps it up, they're one of, if not the most well-rounded team left in the American League.
Vern, how do you think they match up specifically an early look at the Yankees? We saw them just 3 weeks ago. I went back and looked through those games. You know, the first game they lost 10-4, but it's 4-4, and then Stratton and MacArthur both give up three. The second game they win easily, 5-0, and then the third game it goes all the way to 11. Do you think this is a pretty fair fight if the game is between both stadiums versus that game or that those series of games being at Kauffman?
To me, every fight is a fair fight. I never really, when you're built the way that the Royals are, when you perform the way that they have for a majority of the season around pitching, defense, team speed, and the best damn player on the planet, I really don't care who's in the other dugout with how they're playing. Cleveland, Detroit, take your pick. Waka, Reagans, Lugo handing it off to a red-hot bullpen with a defense that's making plays, an aggressive base-running unit, and an offense right now that, you know, Vinny Pasquantino doesn't see big league pitching for a month, and he's 2-for-7 in the playoffs with a pair of walks and a stake. Yeah, they match up well against the Yankees. They match up well against the Dodgers. They match up well against the Phillies. If they're going to play like this, they match up well against everybody.
Yeah, I don't think the Royals, or the Yankees, I should say, want to be playing the Royals at all after watching what
just
happened.
Did you hear Denny, by the way?
He said basically, what, beware? Is that what it was?
Yeah, Yankees beware, and he said it like 5 times. And if Denny's going to be that confident,
so
man,
ominous,
my confidence,
man,
is through the roof.
Yes.
Yeah.
Denny saw all those fights, though, man. He lived through when this was a rivalry in the 70s.
Yeah.
And the 80s. But Vern, the truth is, the Yankees haven't mattered in postseason baseball in 15 years. So if they blow it again this time to the lowly Royals,
well,
is how
it.
I think the Yankees...
They just haven't won.
Sure, but they haven't been to the World
Series.
They've
been a factor in the postseason, sure.
The Astros just have been had their number over the last 10 years or whatever it is.
Right. Here's what I'll say about the Yankees. You know, the hatred that fans like, you know, that remember the 70s and 80s, that remember those battles, and people like us that grew up with, you know, Jeter and Bernie and them winning three straight World Series and seemingly going every single season, we remember the evil empire, but we're also getting up there somewhat. This generation that I'm hearing from now on the post-game show that consistently tells me how old they were in 2014 and 20. Oh, Vern, I was in second grade listening to you in 2015.
Oh, no.
I've been getting that a lot. They have no reason to hate the New York Yankees if you really think about it. That generation has zero reason to despise the Yankees. Honestly, they should like them. Aaron Judge is likable. Juan Soto's likable. The New York, New York song at the end is likable. If you don't remember their dominance, they're not really all that hateable. Maybe Aaron Boone is. I could see people not liking him. But outside of that, why hate the Yankees?
That might be true. And obviously, I come from the other perspective, but you're talking about much younger kids. I think some of it is still like New York sports fan, East Coast sports fan, and just how they feel towards Kansas City. That to me should be enough for anybody to hate.
Coast versus Midwest.
to hate the Yankees or whatever. But back to on the field, like I hear you about the bullpen, and obviously the starting pitching has been sensational. But can they win this series if the offense is putting up three runs every two games, though? I just don't see that happening.
No, it's going to be tough. Yeah, it'll be tough, but certainly, yeah, they can. They can win that. Again, Gerrit Cole's a stud, but they have the same question marks in their bullpen. Right? Their fans are more nervous about their relievers than we've become with the Royals' relief corps. Luke Weaver, remember that bozo that standing on the national anthem, standing on
That's
the
right.
foul
yeah,
line, did
yeah.
that stare down BS with Mike Matheny. He's their closer now. He's their best reliever. Now, we'll see if Luis Gil moves out to the bullpen. They could have a good arm out there. But outside of Gerrit Cole, I think this Royals pitching staff can match zeros or match whatever New York does. So, you know, two runs here, three runs there. Yeah, that could be enough to win. Is it a great recipe, score one run and hold on? No, but that's obvious.
We can get one more in here, Vern, from you, then we can let you go. We know you're busy. You got to get ready for that Yankees game. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow. When you look at what the offense hasn't done, who is it that you want to see more out of the most? We know that Vinny and Bobby have been doing their job, but is, you know, and like Salvi will go through stretches like this. I know you'd say the captain generally, but MJ, Massey, I mean, who do you need to see more offensively out of these next couple of series or next couple of games?
Well, Massey's been terrific.
He's been good.
Bobby's a star. Vinny's fantastic. Salvi's been squaring them up, man. If you go back to game one, he hit three rockets. Yesterday's game, he's hit by a pitch, a single, and a ninth inning rocket. Yuli Gurriel, I guess, would be my answer. But 1-for-3 in the opener, including a double play, 0-for-4 yesterday. MJ, you would like a lefty bat getting right in New York, obviously, but Vinny and Massey seem to be right, so I can wait on MJ Melendez, especially if he's going to be making great plays out in left field.
Yeah,
you know, Renfro, Gurriel, I guess those would be the two that come to mind, but again, man, my feet have been up for weeks. There's just absolutely nothing to worry about if you're a Royals fan right now.
Vern, appreciate it, man. Get a little rest if you can, and then we'll check in tomorrow with you.
Quick heads up, tonight, 6 to 8, an ALDS special. Royals Assistant General Manager Scott Sharp going to stop by, and many more tonight on 96.5 The Fan.
There you go. Josh Vernon will be listening tonight, all things Royals this evening, and then, yeah, he'll join us tomorrow. Then, of course, Saturday, Vern's On Deck show gets you set for Game 1 in the Bronx, ALDS Series Royals Yankees. Yeah, Michael Wacha on the bump against Gerrit Cole.
Your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan, and your playoff Royals now, you know.
Up next, let's talk a little more about Q. You heard him in the celebration there, but let's talk about what I thought was a masterclass with the bullpen, plus the trash of the day. And we're expected still to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes a little bit later on this hour. It's a jam-packed 11 o'clock hour on 96.5 The Fan.
Hey, guys, now we go! Yeah!
Salvador Perez in the clubhouse last night there in Baltimore as the Royals move on to the ALDS, taking on the Yankees.
Fucking tired of that, dude.
Saturday, game one. And yeah, I mean, there's certain individual players you feel even better for during this. Salvador Perez, one of those, based off of him sticking with this organization through some really rough years. We all know the stories that came out in the last calendar year or so about real conversations, potential trades, and honest conversations on both sides, J.J. Piccolo and Salvador Perez and his family, et cetera. And ultimately now, look where they're at. And so it's pretty cool to see how this has worked out for everybody involved in a chance, hopefully, for Salvi to get going in this ALDS too, you know, and to create some more memories individually for him in Cooperstown to see if he can't maybe get some at-bats there against the Yankees that are effective. We know from a leadership standpoint, all that's always there. But I think if this offense were to break out at all in this series, it's hard to imagine it not including him. I think if we're going to all of a sudden be sitting here on Monday saying, man, the offense came alive on Saturday, or sitting
Salvi
here on
would be a part of it.
I think
he
would have to
hard.
Be.
First, not crazy.
Yes.
It's just like in the at-bats that he's not hitting it hard, it just seems like he's giving it away. Like, I think Vinny had told us in the offseason, he was talking about one of the things that he takes the pride in the most is that he doesn't just, it doesn't matter if it's two outs, we're down 10 in the ninth inning. If I'm up to bat, that at bat matters. And so with Salvi, I'll be honest, sometimes sometimes just up there just kind of swinging, having a good old time. And that's fine for the most part, but they are going to have to find more offense out of there. But one thing Vern had said, I also think is somewhat true, but something I'd asked 10 days ago on the show. We took calls, so we can take calls again. How are you feeling about the Royals? But also about this, 913-586-7965. You want to tell us how you're feeling about the Royals, but I want to know this now. 10 days ago, I asked you to call in, and I said, what's your problem with Q? Why are there more people now seemingly complaining about the job he's doing as a manager than I feel like ever before for a guy who took a 56-win team and was winning more than they had been winning? I think now you look even dumber, because yesterday looks like the case of, this is why don't judge a manager based on this, because when the players make the plays, you don't even notice. He had to use Zerpa, Schreiber, Urseg. He went deep into the pen. He pulled Lugo early. And had those guys not come through, I imagine you're calling to this show today telling me how Matt Cotrero doesn't know how to use the pen.
That's the name of the game.
But it looked perfect yesterday, didn't it?
It sure did. You know, I thought it was a masterclass with managing the bullpen, but there is also the reality. I think Vern said it's true. It's, you know, that all of a sudden Serpa doesn't get out of that, and we're sitting here and everybody's critical probably of that decision. So it's amazing how quickly things can shift, but he deserves a ton of credit for how he managed the bullpen. I know some people had issues with pinch hitters, pinch runners late in the game. Thank goodness that it did not end up mattering. But from a bullpen perspective, yeah, I thought it was terrific, you know, and how they went about their business there. And that's the nice thing, I'll say it again, about wrapping it up yesterday and now having a couple days off before game one of the ALDS, is that everybody's good to go again on Saturday. You needed four outs from Urseg on Saturday night. You're good to go for that. You need to stretch, Sam Long for an extra out. What, you know, Chris Bubich for an extra out.
He was using everybody, not even like clean innings. Well, it's righty, lefty, here, there. Now this guy's coming in for two, three, and then hold on. I got Schreiber now. He was just mixing and matching. I think the only decision the entire game I disagreed with was pinch running with Pham. And I was like, I'm not really sure you need to do this now. And he got caught, and everything just kind of felt kind of funky.
My only one was
my
only one was, you know, I didn't think they should have taken MJ out on the base pass. And then it was Garrett Hampson, not Dairon Blanco. I didn't get that decision.
And it felt very early.
And that's part of playoff baseball. Every decision is even under the microscope even more.
And should be.
Fortunately, that didn't matter, but the bullpen, you know, selection and maneuvering strategy, all that was perfect.
I think
the players had to execute it to make it feel like it was perfect too.
What stands out the most about Q is he has a plan. Look, maybe you don't like the plan gold. Maybe somebody else doesn't like the plan, like you said with Hampson, but I don't think he's in there just throwing darts either.
Nope.
He definitively has a way that he likes to deliver and execute the bullpen, deliver and execute pinch runners, bunts. And sometimes late in the season when they were really going through the offensive funk, I mean like the depths of it, they were trying to manufacture runs in the sixth inning. Last night, they were trying to manufacture a run in the sixth inning. They pulled MJ out because they're like, well, Hampson's a little bit faster, and maybe we can find a way to steal a run here. And as good as our bullpen's pitching, That one extra run will give us all the breathing room we need in the world in order to do it. What he had failed to understand at that point probably was apparently everybody in the bullpen was going to have their day. Like, is that the best you've ever seen Angel Serpa look? I mean, honest to God, that was the nastiest situation I've ever seen Serpa look.
Given the situation and the pressure and all that, of course. Yeah, I mean, I think out of all the guys that came in, I was probably more nervous for Schreiber coming in than even Serpa. I just was.
He's had a mixed bag this year, but he's been good lately.
Yeah, but right now, I mean, of course, if you rank it out, Urseg is who you feel the best about. But you know what? That group, everybody that pitched yesterday, basically, that's the group that I think we're just going to, unless the game gets out of hand at some point, that's the group that I think we're just going to see over and over this series.
The ones you just saw?
Yeah, the ones we just saw. The only way I think we get to, you know, a Daniel Lynch or somebody like that is if a starter goes even less than 4 1/3, or we have an extra inning game. You know, other than that, I think
there's
that
enough
group,
spread that yeah, Lynch that, doesn't have to pitch much.
No, that group we saw last night, I think that, and especially another best of five series with the off days and everything, I think those are the only guys you really should have to use. There'll be one other instance where
I think if they're down 2-0 in the sixth and the starter's coming out, they might go to Lynch first in an effort to preserve the guys you're talking about. But Lynch's job there is still important. Lynch's job in that scenario is to make sure the game doesn't get out of hand. What's crazy about this is think about all the names we've mentioned of guys that could actually get outs. I mean, does that not hit you a little bit? The fact that Zerpa and Schreiber and Long and Urseg and Bubich have all gotten like big outs of this. I'm not kidding. 3 weeks ago, if you had told me they had to go five deep in the bullpen, I'd have been on watch, dude. There's no way. Well, there's no way I would have felt good about that.
The biggest source of frustration all year for Royals fans was the bullpen. But I think it is important to keep mentioning this bullpen is so much different than the one that was pitching in May, so much different than the one that was pitching on July 31st, the one that was pitching on August 15th. It's a different bullpen based off of how they started to whittle the rotation down a little bit in the pen, I should say. Some of it because of injury, a lot of it because of performance. And so they found the group that they trust the most, that has the most effective stuff. And now you just have a really, really confident group of four or five pitchers.
Yeah, everyone feels like they're getting the outs.
Urseg and Bubich and Serpa and Long and Schreiber. You have five guys that they're clearly confident in. And honestly, that's, you know, other than the scenario you presented maybe with Lynch, those should just be the five guys that they're able to use throughout this entire series coming up against the Yankees.
Yeah, no reason to think it's going to go any different than that. I can't believe the confidence shift in the pen. I told you a week ago that I thought the new Achilles heel was the offense. If they start hitting, they can sweep teams. If the starting pitching is what it's been all year, the bullpen's now locked in. If they start hitting, they might run roughshod on some groups because
that's why they're dangerous. That's why they're extremely dangerous. And you know, that's the key in the point. Can you get everything clicking at once? We know it is for the Tigers. They continue to roll there through the Astros. Right now, the Royals have two of the most important things clicking. That's why they won the series. Yep. That's why they got a great chance against the Yankees. But boy, oh boy, yes. If they could have this pitching and suddenly the offense gets going, well, then we're talking about a team that it's getting 2014 vibes again. Then if they win on Saturday and they're able to have the offense going as well, then we are feeling like, oh boy, is this another 2014 type of run? That we're not there yet, but that's what I would start feeling if the offense got going.
Yeah, probably. I mean, again, you're right. If they win game one, it's funny, not even just if they win game one on Saturday, I'm like, well, they're going to the World Series. Problem solved. Everybody worries over because if it's going like this, well, then I guess we're done here. I'll see you guys in October, late October baseball.
Start scheduling the tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we'll need to. That's exactly right.
So there's plenty of people who've offered, which I really appreciate. Some people who are a tattoo artist that offered. Some people who say they know a guy who will do it for free. Some people in the tech center just straight up offering to pay for it, which I appreciate. I do think I have to reach out to one person first if we get to that part in the World Series. The person who designed the Cody and Gold logo is a tattoo artist who also does professional hand lettering. So if there's a person who's going to write words on me permanently via a tattoo, shouldn't it be the guy who designed the show logo?
I would say so.
Have you thought, though, about the offer? Because on April 12th, you said, you would get a tattoo if the Royals win. I told you there's an offer on the table. If you are willing to accept the renegotiated terms, if the Royals just make the World Series, you get the tattoo of who gives a bleep their winning games or winning games, and then you don't have to worry about your strip club bet anymore. So then you kill two bets with one at the same time. And if the Royals don't get to a World Series, then both bets are done. Very, think about that. So, that's enticing.
So that is enticing. I'm not going to lie. That is enticing. I went back and listened to the original audio of when I offered this, when I said, not just the short clip, like, and I said, if they win the World Series, I'll get a tattoo. Mm-hmm. In the clip, you immediately start offering me if they just get to the World Series, too. Yeah. You're like, can I just get you on board for if they get to the World Series? And my comment then, I'm going to listen to past Cody on this one. My comment then was, I'm not getting tattoos. I'm not getting participation trophy tattoos. I get tattoos for winning championships. This is a championship level town. Now, that means I'm still going to have to go to the strip club at some point. But I get a tattoo if
that's the issue here. We have to take care of the series. I'm sick of talking about the strip club bet. It's been 2 years. We've been in Vegas multiple times. We're going to Vegas in 3 weeks. 3 weeks we're out in Vegas. It could be, we could be having our Friday night party there, the game one of the World Series, heading into the Chiefs weekend against the Raiders. All that could happen at the same time. I need you to pay off this bet. Otherwise, I think we have to enact a ban again.
I think you can up the stakes a little bit more and say either he takes his bet or he has to go to the strip club when in Vegas. He has to go.
I have to go when in Vegas?
I like this.
You can't just give me ultimatums.
At some point, though, there has to be consequences for not paying off bets. Drew has one outstanding bet, but he's paid off. He paid off one.
Yeah, and now we're busy, so
we'll get the McDonald's challenge at some point in time.
I do need to get Barbara his gift card, too, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's a different.
You thing. Handle that on your own. Yeah, you do what you.
You didn't
do.
Pay up a bet with Kramer.
I guess from 2 years ago it was. It was he filled in on the show producing. I totally forgot about it. I think he did too until last week.
Yeah, that's what happened. I forgot about the strip club.
Oh no! I guess I have to have his Venmo handle on the back of my car for a week. I don't remember what the bet was.
I think that's what he told me it was.
I think I have to have his Venmo handle on the back of my car for a week because of our. I said the Raiders last year weren't going to get to
500, and they got to 500 like 8 wins.
They beat the Chiefs on Christmas Day. Yeah.
Oh, God, that's the worst way to lose.
It was the one that really did
it. Gross.
Yeah.
Anyway. You probably let him off too easy because I think he was ultimately very confident his team was making the postseason, which, of course,
It wasn't a firm bet, but if he wants me to pay off that, I'll do that.
Kramer, Texas said he never forgot, you know? I never forgot. It turns out we all got some bets to pay up, huh?
Coming up in 10 minutes, we're expected to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes here on 96.5 The Fan. But let's get to the trash.
Trash of the day.
All right, so you guys know with athletes, these are very popular, but anybody owns them. They've also like different brands. The Theraguns, that's like the name brand, but there's different brands. You can find them on Amazon a lot cheaper. Those massage guns.
Sure.
And they're very effective.
You got one?
I do not, but they're very effective. So, a gentleman in central China, Mr. Liu.
Okay.
He frequently used a massage gun. Recommended by his doctor at the time for just, you know, you got a tight leg muscle, whatever. Normal stuff that you're supposed to use it on. Unfortunately, he frequently used the massage gun on his face and eyes. Yeah,
I think that's like in the instructions of immediate no. Mm-hmm. Like, don't do anything but that.
Battery-powered massage gun at the recommendation of a fitness instructor who told him it would work wonders on his tired muscles. After hitting the gym every 2 days, he was looking for a way to relax. The massage gun proved incredibly effective. So much that he decided to use it on his eyes. Due to his busy work schedule, his eyes always felt tired and dry, so he thought that the massage gun would have the same effect on his eyes as it did on his muscles.
Oh,
he
was
wrong.
Sure you don't think you're smarter than 75% of society? This man thought he could put a massage gun to his eyeball.
This goes to common sense. Common sense, 90%. Yeah, 90% sure. He used it. He had to undergo surgery after suffering a lens dislocation. He developed cataracts at the age of 42. He almost has all his vision back now after surgery, but he is very fortunate he is not blind. What an idiot.
How is he not blind?
We've all seen the Theraguns. Like, you put the different attachments on them. Some of them are like the round balls. There's other ones, but like, the pressure of that, I mean, I would feel like your whole eye would pop out almost because of that thing.
I can't believe he didn't go blind. That man is lucky.
You ever have any balls in your eye?
Lucky. I'm not going to answer that.
Drew, you ever have any?
No. No. Confident, no.
I am not going to answer that question, but importantly...
I mean, it's a simple no, I think.
I think it's a simple no.
What is the
I don't want the clip of
I think it's
you
a simple
asking
no.
that question and then me saying no. I don't want it combined into some
it's a yes
layer.
Or no answer or question.
No, I've never used a massage gun
so you haven't
on
had,
my eyeball.
So you've never had any balls near your eyes.
That is correct.
Okay.
I just can't believe that somebody would think that that was a good idea. But then go to like any of those doctor stories about like these proctologists and stuff. You know how many stupid people just stick things up their ass that they shouldn't? No business!
Well, we
people
that,
do stupid things with their body, man, all the time. They're careless with it.
Props to the Kansas State guy, at least for following through.
Oh, he actually do the five-layer burrito thing?
Oh, no, he did it.
Drew
no
said
way.
He watched it. He said he did
No,
it.
You watched?
No, hang on. I did not
Drew
watch
said
no,
no,
no, no. You watched the video?
When you're scrolling on Twitter, sometimes something pops up. There was no video. It was a picture, and I was like, I don't need to see that. So this person posted images.
Okay.
And
I think that's
it
fake.
Was retweeted by many people who I unfortunately follow. In college
you might have
sports.
Used AI. I don't want to say for sure, but you know, like he said, someone says there's a photo of it. I didn't look at it. I'm not.
I don't
I'm
need
okay.
to look that
when
one
you're
up.
Scrolling on your phone and it's just there, like you can't. It's
just
hard.
There. There's no community standards on this app anymore. Alex is tweeting in bold all the time. People could just have burrito stuffed up their ass
no
online.
The bold tweet is just gonna stay though until Elon changes it. It's just gonna happen. I'm not. I told you it's a weird bug. I'm not changing it. Every tweet's in bold. Sorry, I can't help it.
I do believe that individual did get banned from Twitter for his account was suspended.
Who
for,
was?
The Kansas State fan. I think his account got suspended.
Well,
by
for adult content.
For
although they don't suspend that normally. That stuff pops up. I almost cursed. That stuff pops up. So
watch yourself. Get a little too loose there for a minute.
Yeah. I was about to say that stuff.
This individual is not smarter than 50% of the population for using a Theragun on his eyeball.
That's not smarter than 5% of the population.
He's so lucky that this surgery was even able to correct that to where he can almost see the same way. I would feel like your eyeball would pop out.
Yeah.
Like just imagine,
like out of the socket, like in a cartoon.
Like you were saying with
the pressure
of
that.
Yeah.
Also painful. Hello.
Also, it's just like it's one of the areas of your body you are extra careful about protecting.
Yeah.
My eye—they're too exposed already. Yeah. I can't be having.
Oh, we've all got
any kind of risk near an eyeball.
You've played a sporting event where someone accidentally—you know, basketball—they accidentally poke you in the eye, and you know how that feels. Imagine.
Did you say he did it multiple times, or he just did it once?
I
thought he said multiple times.
After a week, he lost his vision. So, he frequently used the massage.
Helped,
so, the first time, it didn't do any damage. I don't know how. He had tired eyes. He just thought that you could massage your eyeball.
Take a nap.
He thought you could massage your eyeball.
Get some Visine, dude. Like, there are other choices.
If you feel the need to really use it on your face, use it, like, on your temple a little. You know, don't
do that either.
If you really have to.
Someone says, wait, well, what gun? A Theragun. It's the massage guns. Theraguns, there's different brands, but that's the name brand, and athletes use it on the sidelines all the time. You see them working out, like, their calf muscles, hamstring, or whatever.
Yeah. Big with, like, pickleball players and golfers.
There's a funny video of Tyreek Hill on the sideline. They're using it, and he's drinking a little pickle juice or whatever it was. Remember? You know what I'm talking about.
So you gotta get Cole Reagan's on that plan, man.
Yeah, he's had
twice
in a month, Cole Reagan's has had cramps.
Somebody said Alex and Scott Van Pelt have the most bold takes on Twitter.
Are his in bold, too?
I think he's had some of his in bold, yes. I don't know if that's intentional or not. But
I don't know, man.
I don't know what's going on with your Twitter,
I'm not messing with it anymore. It's the same
You're just
thing.
Gonna keep sending him bold?
I am tweeting the same way I have for 15 years. It just has decided to not switch off of bold, and it was never a problem.
Like,
it looks the
Cole's
same to me.
Cole's got the caps lock on or something like that. I mean, he's really confident in what he's saying.
I think when I tweet from my computer, it doesn't do it. But on the mobile app, it does, so...
Sorry, man.
There you go. That's the trash of the day. Up next, we will get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Expected to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes right here on 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Whenever Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes speak, we move things around a little bit. That's why Chiefs Red Half Hour started a little bit later. We're also in the next couple of minutes expected to head out to Arrowhead and hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes ahead of their Monday night football game, and it's turning into a hell of a Monday night. We'll talk more about it on Monday, I'm sure, when we're actually there. And how on earth are you guys balancing this thing? Are you going to a bar, multi-screen setup? What are you doing? You going to the
What's
Chiefs
your
game?
Monday
are
plan?
You just going to tailgate at Arrowhead and just watch the Royals game in the parking lot at Arrowhead? We'll get to that on Monday. But what an epic showcase for Kansas City Monday night is about to be, where you got the Royals game starting at, 6:38? And then, of course, the Chiefs game a little less than an hour later at Arrowhead. Luckily
on Monday night football.
Luckily the Royals are actually in New York. Otherwise we would have had some time differences and everything going on. The Royals would have had to play in the afternoon or something.
They've never really had this opportunity consecutively very often. The Chiefs should absolutely show a highlight if something good happens in the Yankees game on the Jumbotron.
Yeah, I
mean, if Bobby Witt Jr. hits a home run, they should show it on the Jumbotron for everyone to see.
The whole pregame should have the game. They won't do that because they have their standard operating stuff, I'm sure. Like, they might show cuts, but like, at some point they reach their normal game day program. They got to run through there. But yeah, I mean, that's why I'm wondering for people if they're tailgating on Monday, if you're just going to hang in the parking lot till the Royals game is over.
And if you're the stadium, is your plan just to like pull it up on YouTube TV, pull up TBS and just try to like stream watch it where they're going on? Because here's the good news, I guess, if you're, you know, typically a baseball game is about, 2.5 hours now? Yesterday's game was three, but there were 78 pitching changes.
But that happens in playoff baseball a lot more.
Yeah. It certainly happens more. Happens less now that Terry Francona's not a manager, but it happens more than in a regular season game. But still, I mean, it's a balance. Like, if you've already got your Chiefs tickets, you're like, damn, Chiefs on Monday night. At least it's only game two. Because if it was game seven and the Chiefs playing at the same time, and actually the timing's working out really well. The Monday night game, okay, timing doesn't line up great. Guess what the Chiefs are on after Monday night? A bye week.
Yeah, that's nice.
The Chiefs will not get in your way of Royals enjoyment the rest of the way. If they need five games, they'll play on Saturday for game five. The following Monday, we'll start up the next week for ALCS. The Royals and the ALCS. The Chiefs won't play another game until that following Sunday. So you got a little bit of like leeway in there to just enjoy the Royals for a bit.
And because of the bye week, it sets up where you would think of that Wednesday home game here at Kauffman. You're going to have some Chiefs players there. I don't think it'll be a ton of them because it's still a bye week. A lot of guys like to get out of town and go see their family or go on vacation. But Mahomes and maybe a few others, you know, absolutely. I'm sure we'll see Mahomes, who's, of course, part of the ownership group, too. I can almost guarantee you he'll be at the game Wednesday night.
From the 816, my cousin is getting married Saturday at 4. He said maybe she should stop being so selfish and move to the wedding. I guess here's the question is, if they're sports fans, you could probably be rest assured that the game will be on somewhere, the reception, right? You could probably
not every reception has TVs, though.
No, but I think I've seen people like roll them in if it's like a major sporting event, right? They were probably banking on the fact that when they planned this wedding a year ago, the Royals were coming off a 56-win season. They probably thought Saturday at 4 was safe, right? Unless people were Alabama, Georgia fans last week or whatever, they probably thought they were safe. Now, running into a problem. If you are a sports fan, I think you got to give people access to TV. If not, I don't have to tell you, man. That's a tough spot. Your sister's wedding's coming up in like a month?
Yeah, the baseball season will be well over by then. Okay. It's middle November.
Okay, so you're safe. But if it had been this one, what's the play? Weddings at 4 guess, on the phone, you check the score?
My guess is it would be checking the phone. I don't want to speak for them. My guess would be that, there would just not be a TV. It's still the wedding. Like, you know, you don't want people just standing in front of a TV the entire reception. You want people having fun and on the dance floor, etc. So my guess would be there would not be any sort of television.
Yeah.
If that scenario.
I'm just, everyone's a little different.
We've had the whole fall wedding discussion. Normally it's for football reasons, not
for
baseball reasons.
You're a summer wedding guy.
I'm a no wedding guy right now. You know, I don't have no plans.
If you were to get married, you'd be suggesting a spring or summer wedding.
But you know what? You know, places get booked up. Sometimes you gotta do it when you can do it. That happens. You don't always have a choice on the specific date. You know, you got your venue. Some places get booked up. You got the venue you like. Maybe they're not available in May.
Yeah, I'd say that. No, but like, again, maybe fall works for a variety of, maybe they're not sports fans.
All right, let's go out to Arrowhead and hear from Andy Reid right here on 96.5 The Fan.
We're getting the swelling out of his knee, and then he's going to have further tests next week. So really don't have anything to tell you from there. We'll see how these tests go next week and once the swelling's out of there. Congratulations to the Royals first. What a great job they've done to this point, and I know they're fired up to keep on going. So, and I know we're all glad to have them coming back here and having another chance to see them play. With that, we look forward to the challenge of playing the Saints. Good football team, well coached. I mean, Dennis does a nice job with that group and their coordinators. All three of them do a nice job with their phases and. You know, we've just got to make sure that we have a good week of preparation here going forward. And then just on the business side of it, Clyde, you saw, was elevated. He's got a 21-day window. We'll just get him back into the swing of things here and see how he does. See how he does going forward here the next couple days. Anyways, with that, time's yours.
Is your little more sense of optimism with Rashee than there was 2 days ago?
Yeah, I think it's just wait and see. You know, just is where we're at. And you know, for his sake, we're really hoping that things work out, you know, how for the best. But let's just see where it goes, and you know, leave it up to the doctors to see. I'm definitely not a doctor.
What are the plans for Clyde going forward here?
Yeah, so we'll practice him today with the scout team, give him some reps there, and let him just kind of get back in the swing of things. He's in good shape. He's been working out, so just get him back into the football part of it.
Anywhere close with Omenihu to getting him back to practice too?
I think that'll be a little bit here, yeah.
Andy, what sorts of things are you seeing when you've referred to a few times being close on a few things offensively? What are the things that stand out to you the most that are
sure
just off the tape?
Yeah, by just getting rid of the penalties and those self-inflicted wounds, turnovers, penalties, those hurt you at this level. And you've got to take care of that. And I've got to make sure that I'm putting the guys in the right position to do the right thing. So, and I think the coaches would tell you the same thing with that. But that's where we're at. But it's close. We just got to keep rolling.
When Rice has been just so important to you guys, and you won't have him for Monday, how much realistically does that change, even schematic, what you do, or do you stay the same with some of the replacement players?
Yeah. Listen, I mean, Rice had a phenomenal year, unfortunately, in this league. Injuries happen, and life goes on. So we have always expected the next guys to step up and roll, and it's no different now. But is Rashi? There's not another Rashi. There's other guys though that are very, very good. So we'll be fine.
Andy, have you been through an experience quite like this, where what you project is not even one snap going into a season, let alone now into game five? You're not having your top running back, your two top receivers. Have you gone through an experience quite like this to start a season?
Yeah, I'm sure I have. I mean, I've been doing it a long time, so there's been injuries that have taken place, but I don't really dwell on that, Nate. I mean, I just kind of move on and go and wish the best to the kids, most of all. And we'll take care of business. You know, that's Veach has done a good job of bringing people in here in depth and that. So just got to, you know, got to take care of business.
When you look at Derek Carr, what's he doing and how's he fitting in with that offense?
Yeah, he's doing a very nice job. He's always been a good player. I mean, that's not, there hasn't been a question from our standpoint on that part. So they're doing a good job of protecting him, and he's doing a good job of delivering it to their receivers, and they've got good skill players there. So and good running back who also is involved in the pass game and the run game. But he's done a very nice job. Yeah.
Coach, I don't know if Tyron's will play obviously in the last game, but just wonder if you could speak to what he meant to sort of the defensive shift you guys had here. This also what you've seen in the 3 years from the New Orleans.
Yeah. Yeah, a phenomenal player. I'll vote for him for the Hall of Fame going forward. I don't have a vote, but I would vote for him. So he's a tremendous leader. He actually makes us his home here. So I think when he's done, he'll probably come back here. So, but great kid, great player. Brings a lot of energy. Yeah.
One of the other players that you've got on the NFI list with B.J. Thompson, how's he doing in his rehab, and is there still a possibility to come back?
Yeah, again, the doctors are monitoring him. He's doing good. Yeah, to answer your question, he's doing good. He's in all the meetings and that. And, he's heading in the right direction, but we just have to see on that. I think time is a big part of that. We'll see how that goes.
One of the things you mentioned, being close on a couple things, looked like Juwan Taylor had a couple of those kind of penalties that were a problem for him last year early. Was it just officiating crew kind of thing, or was he getting in some bad habits? Those are correct.
Yeah, he's got to fix those. I mean, he's got to fix those. That's the bottom line. He's very quick off of the ball and takes a lot of pride in that. But you can't be, you got to make sure you're not offsides. So he's got to take care of that part. He will.
Okay, thanks, Coach.
All right, good.
All right, so that was Andy Reid speaking to the media. We're expected to hear from Patrick Mahomes in just a minute or so as well. The beginning, if you caught that, Andy Reid said Rashee Rice, the only player who's not going to practice. The current plan is still to wait for swelling in his right knee to go down and then further testing next week. So we're still in this holding pattern.
Of course, you're listening to KFNZ FM and AM HD1 and HD2 in Kansas City right here on 96.5 The Fan. Yeah, he said no additional optimism. That seems to conflict with some of the reports that are like, maybe good news.
Yeah.
I just told you, you and I have decided we're going to operate as if Rashee Rice is unavailable to this team the rest of the year until, I don't know, mid-October, November of next year, probably most likely, based on the way that injury looked. If I get good news, great. I'll take the positives.
Sure.
But swelling going down to have to take a look at the injury is not super uncommon. And if Andy's not making it seem like he's overly optimistic that they're going to get something, then I'm not going to be either.
All right, let's go back out there and hear from the quarterback, Patrick Mahomes.
Back at the machine play, we got hurt. Mm-hmm. Did you know in the moment how hard you got hit kind of in that? I mean, did you feel fortunate enough to be hurt yourself?
No, I didn't notice it in the moment. I was more worried about trying to get the ball. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, you're just trying to make a play, and it happens whenever you're trying to make tackles.
When you saw the replay, though, did you think, ooh?
No, I mean, when I saw the replay, I felt like shit that I hit Rashee. I mean, I think that's pretty much all. I mean, I wasn't really worried about myself. I was worried about hopefully his injury and hopefully that it wasn't as bad as it looked because I was the one that hit him.
Touch guys to Andy about Tyron, but just, you know, I don't know if he's going to end up playing on Monday, but just what did he mean to your guys' locker room when he was here? What kind of interactions kind of stand out?
Yeah, I mean, I think just me being a young player, especially when he got here, I mean, just seeing that type of leader, I think was something that I'll forever remember. The way he inspired guys, the energy that he played with. I mean, obviously, he's a great football player. I mean, everybody can see that. But truly a great leader, one of the best leaders I've ever been around. And he pushed to get the best out of everybody every single day. And he treated practice like games. He tried to get better every single day. And that's something that has helped me become who I am. And so a great football player, man. And I'm hoping that he gets out there, not for me and my sake, because, I mean, he's a great football player, always around the ball. But I think Kansas City, getting to see him come back and be on that field again will be special for the city.
It stand out pretty early on that there were some traits that you could pick up early in your career.
Yeah, I mean, you sit there and watch those guys that, I mean, I watched him when he was in college and he dominated college football, and then get into the NFL and all the great plays that he had made, and then being able to see him on a day-to-day basis is when you want to see those guys that are the top of the top and how they prepare every single day. And he was one of those guys that you knew why he was great when you saw him practice and how he went about his business.
Talked about how you guys are going to have to rely on Travis more without Rice on Monday. Just curious about Juju Smith-Schuster and Justin Watson and your rapport with them and how big they've now become.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those guys are always the guys that do it the right way. I mean, they're always in the right position. They do what they're supposed to do, get guys lined up. And I think having those guys is a luxury because you know that they're going to be there, they're going to get open, and they're going to make plays when their numbers are called. And so I think Brett Veach did a great job of continuing to build within that receiving room. Obviously not expecting to have these two kind of big injuries early in the year in that receiving room, but having the support of the guys to come in and step up and make plays whenever those guys aren't in there.
Speaking of Juju, when the Chiefs bring back a player who had been here previously, Jody Fortson, I guess, would be the latest example of that, and Kareem, how much are they able to hit the ground running? And like maybe a percentage basis do they have?
Yeah, I mean, they always have a good feel for like our main stuff, our base concept stuff. Every year in the offseason, Coach Reed adds new stuff, and the coaches, offense coaches, look around at what we can do better. And so they have to learn some of that type of stuff. But I think you've seen with the guys that we've brought back is guys that are very intelligent. They're able to pick up the offense quickly. And so when stuff like this last game happens, you can throw Juju in there. He can run some of the routes that Rashee has, and he can get even and be in different positions maybe that didn't practice all week because he prepares the right way and he's ready for his moment.
Patrick, you injuries are part of the game, but you guys have been hit pretty hard so far this year offensively. What's the difficulty for you in adjusting to a lineup that's seemingly different every week?
I don't – once the week goes on and you go through your game plan, it's usually pretty smooth because you have an understanding of the guys and what we're trying to do and the concepts of the plays. During the game sometimes, especially how it happened this last game early, where you obviously Rasheed's a huge part of the game plan, you have to kind of throw guys in there and try to make that timing up. And coach tries to get that done in practice. He tries to throw guys in certain situations, but obviously there's limited reps. But I thought the guys did a great job of accepting the challenge and being in there in those moments. And but Coach Reed does a great job of getting guys prepared and ready to go throughout a week of game plan. And we had an extra day this week, so I'm sure guys will be ready to go out there and play some great football.
You face a Dennis Allen defense, like almost any week. Is there an expectation you guys are going to have to sort of do that methodical, work your way down type?
Yeah, I think just – very intelligent coach. I mean, someone that does a lot of different things. He's a game plan specific coach. Someone that it's not all about his defense. He looks at the offenses and what they do best. He tries to take those away, and he's really good at it. And so he'll throw changeups in there you might have not seen the entire season, or in his past, because he thinks this might work this week. So it'll be a great challenge for us. They're a physical team. They play extremely fast. And they have a lot of great players and veteran players, so they can kind of get away with stuff because they know what they can and can't get away with. So you got to make sure that you're really on top of every single check at the line of scrimmage and prepared for everything that whenever you step to the football.
Can you talk about the big play, the 54-yard touchdown pass, what that did for the offense that day and what it does for your receivers' confidence and the whole offense?
Yeah, I mean, whenever you hit those deep passes, it kind of opens everything up because defense have to have more and more respect for any ability to score on one play. And it was big in that game. I mean, they were starting to get more and more downhill because we were running the ball and we weren't moving it and throwing it vertically. And so when we were able to hit that deep one, it kind of opened up the offense at least a little bit. And our goal is to continue to show that we can do that on a week-to-week basis and even more than one time a game. So there was more opportunities in that game to go downfield, so I have to continue to push the ball down the field so that it opens up everyone else underneath.
We'll go a few more. We'll go Nick, Todd, and then Blair. Go ahead, Nick.
Patrick, when you're building chemistry with a new receiver, a guy you haven't worked with in a while, how long does it really take for you guys to see the field the same way?
It depends on every receiver. I think we have a lot of intelligent receivers in this receiving room right now, and so I feel like we're all seeing the field the same way. But now it's about me just having that trust and giving them those shots to make plays and traffic and stuff like that. And so, like I did with Xavier on that deep one, I think there was more opportunities to throw even to him later on in that game. And so just continue for myself to give him those chances to go out there and make plays and be the receiver that he is. And that goes throughout the entire receiving room, the tight end room, and the running back room.
Tom? A couple of non-football things. I mean, you're pretty excited about this Royals playoffs kind of getting moving on here to be back here in town. What's your excitement level for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. I mean, it's great for the city. I mean, I've heard all the stories about how awesome the environment was the last time they were in the playoffs, and they're going to go up against a great baseball team in the Yankees, historic baseball team. And so I'm just excited for these guys. I mean, they're hungry. They're playing great baseball right now. To be at the K, a sold-out crowd, hopefully, and get to see that October baseball there is going to be special.
And on our radio station this morning, known Yankee fan Garrett Dieter may be sniffing around for you for tickets. Is that appropriate for someone like that?
Yeah, man, I'll let him be there because when we hopefully win, I'll get to talk trash. So, no, it's he's a big Yankees fan. I think if the Yankees lost this series, he might have to move cities. So let's see if we can do that for him.
Keeping with the baseball theme, it just occurs to me that because of the sport you play, have you ever been to a postseason baseball game?
I've been to a postseason baseball game. Back when I was in high school, the Rangers made the World Series a couple of times. And so I got to see him lose, I think, game five, I think, against the Giants one year. And then I watched them lose or maybe win the game that I was at when they went up against the Phillies, and they ended up losing in game six on that ball on the warning track. So, I mean, I've had some close heartbreaks there with the Rangers, but the Royals are going to turn it around for me.
All right, so that was Patrick Mahomes talking about a team that he's part of the ownership group for. That would be the Kansas City Royals, and of course we all know.
Hell yeah.
Home baseball in the postseason, finally back in Kansas City beginning on Wednesday. I know he didn't specifically say it there, but yeah, I would expect him probably to be there during the bye week on that Wednesday night game against the New York Yankees. And everybody always, anybody that did not live in this city, and he didn't, in 14 and 15, everybody now hopefully gets the chance to experience that next week, some form or fashion, whether you're fortunate enough to have tickets to the game or just to be in the city for a postseason series that also has a home game? Because it was one thing the last couple of days, we had a blast out at Jefferson's and we had a great crowd there and it was awesome and you started to get those vibes again. But when the game is in your city that day, like when you wake up on Wednesday, and hopefully the series, the Royals are up 2-0 at bare minimum, hopefully it's a split going into that game. But when you wake up on Wednesday and knowing that there's a playoff game happening later that day in your city, it's a whole different animal, I think. I think you can sense that in the city, and we will sense it on Wednesday.
That tends to be the two longest days of practice for the Chiefs. The Wednesday-Thursday combo, that's when they do, like, bigger things. Who cares? He'll be out there on Wednesday. He'll be out there on Thursday. You will see the cut to Patrick Mahomes and in a bye week. I know normally you try to plan some bye week travel. I guess that'll be the real question is, what was your pre-planned travel schedule for the bye week related to now what your plan is that the Royals are in the postseason? Yeah. Now, if you're Mahomes, you can just cancel a flight, change a hotel. You can do whatever the hell you want.
He'll be there.
I guarantee
there.
He'll be at one of
he'll
those
He'll be
games.
There, but the 53-man roster, it's not like there's going to be 20 Chiefs players at the game.
No,
I mean, it's
going to
be, let's see, maximum what, eight? Like, that's like the max. It's probably like 5 to 10 of them.
Yeah,
that'll be at the right Chiefs players. That'll be with Mahomes in a suite somewhere.
Yes,
my guess,
give or take. That's,
you know,
probably
what I mean?
In the range. But it's the Mahomes is so careful in the way he talks in the media. One of the most honest sounding answers he gave in that entire thing was, "Hey, when you watch the play, looks like you could have almost gotten hurt on that play where you're trying to help get the football on that play. Were you thinking about that when you went to watch?" He's like, "No, I felt like bleep that I hit Rashee." And you could hear it in his voice, like, I don't care about the rest of it. I felt bad because I injured another player on our
team.
Yeah,
I wonder if that's something that's bugged him throughout the week. I'm sure it has.
I think it would kill me.
I mean, just obviously it wasn't anything that was done intentionally or anything like that, but you still probably feel terrible to have something like that happen. It happens in sports though all the time. I mean, it's not a, you know.
I know, but your own team, you know, hurting.
Yeah.
God,
no,
your
I mean,
own
I'm sure that sucks.
Brutal.
It's the same thing we discussed with the Urseg-Vinny scenario from a month ago or whatever, right? Where that play, Urseg, you know, people were criticizing him for the throw. Even it was a fluky play. If Urseg doesn't throw it, Vinny never breaks the thumb. Now we can look back knowing that Vinny's back. It's and they're in the postseason. It doesn't seem
still protecting his hand, you know, in the handshake line, by the way.
Yeah, it's like, don't you dare try to high-five me on that broken thumb. Absolutely
not. Yeah,
he's
keeping that thing high and tight, protected, you know?
It was like Joe Burrow when he hurt his wrist. He was only high-fiving people with his left. He wasn't high-fiving anybody. Same sort of concept there.
Yeah.
Don't risk it.
Yeah, I understand it. But, I mean, this is the thing. Like, Mahomes is going to get experience for the first time since he's been in Kansas City. Well, we haven't done in 9 years in the city. The Royals are in the ALDS. They got past the wild card round. They're the first team, as you mentioned earlier in the show, in Major League Baseball history to lose 100 games. And then in addition to it, also win a playoff series. Three have made the postseason. The other two didn't do anything. They didn't show up to the postseason and start making noise. They lost because they were still a flawed team. Not the Royals. They lost 100 games, have won a playoff series. And you had mentioned Vinny. How about this?
And there's a ground ball through that pulled in infield. And it's 1-0 Royals as Massey scores.
Like, it just felt good to hear that again, I think, if you're a Chief or if you're a Royals fan, because it's just been too long since we kind of got to experience that. And yeah, the vibes at Jefferson's last night were great. I think everybody's probably like starting to think they like going to watch a playoff baseball game in a bar feels even different than watching a playoff football game in a bar in a way. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know what it is.
It's the, again, it's the every single pitch. And like the silence right before a pitch is going to happen.
And pitch and you're
yeah,
like,
the silence. And then, the crowd erupts and yeah, there it's a different level. We've all been to big time games at Arrowhead or at a bar for a Chiefs game, and there are definitely those moments. But playoff baseball, every pitch is just so intense, and that's what makes it great. And you know, overall for this team to be in this spot, you mentioned the historical significance. I mean, it having 100 losses and then winning a playoff series, for that to never happen in a sport that's 100 plus years
7
old
billion,
or whatever.
Old.
You know, that's what's really remarkable about it. And then Bobby Witt Jr. to put himself in the company of only one other player, period, since we've had American League, National League Baseball. That's Jimmy Fox, which is to drive in the game winning run in your first two postseason games. Like, what? Like, I almost expect him to do it again on Saturday. I mean, that's where we're at with this kid. It's ridiculous how the moment's never too big for him, and he can carry a team, and that's why he is, other than Shohei, there's not even a debate, he's the best player in baseball. So, and that is why this team is in this position as well, and why, as we've said time and time again, you can enjoy this moment even more, not only because it's been 9 years, but because this is a homegrown talent that's coming through in the postseason, that signed a massive extension in the offseason. You're not worried about, man, yeah, but in like a month and a half, you know, who knows what his future is? No, we know where his future is. It's in Kansas City.
Yeah, I think we can talk even more about him individually. Obviously, I think one of the biggest storylines out of the entire wild card series was they decided to go into a series and be like, well, let's see if Bobby Witt Jr. can beat us. Well, that's a stupid strategy. That's just they let him hit again. He didn't end up coming through, but they let him hit again with a runner on second base when I thought for sure they'd walk him. I was like, how do you keep throwing to him? What kind of decision-making is this? Going into a series being like, well, Bobby Witt Jr., we'll let him beat us is just a bad, plain and simple, a bad strategy by him. That's just not a good approach. But in baseball all the time, we talk about like, hey, one guy can't be a savior. I know he's the number two overall pick. He can't do it. Dude, he's been in the team, the major league level, for 3 years. And in the third year, he already got them to a playoff team and a win in a playoff series. Between the two stories, I would say, obviously, one is they kept pitching to Bobby. The other one is that the Royals pitching, apparently, is now just like 17 consecutive Cy Young Award winners coming in one right after the other. The first game was Cole Reagans. Cole damn Reagans. Six innings, blood, you know, ice cold, blood in his veins, eight strikeouts, and then they just went to the three horses you would expect him to get a win. Game two, they only got 4 1/3 out of Lugo. He only gave up the one run, but they only got 4 1/3 out of Lugo, and I'll be honest, when that game went out there, I'm like, okay, well, you guys know you're going to have to score more than one, right? It's 1-1. You're going to get like five more here if we're going to bullpen the final 4 2/3. And what do they do? 0-0-0-0-0. They didn't let up a run the rest of the way. Yeah. It includes Zerpa and Schreiber and bases loaded situations and a whole bunch of trouble.
But that scenario with Bobby and why, you know, hey, they keep giving him an opportunity to beat him, and he did. If I know Salvi would be batting behind him, but the way Salvi's hitting as well, if Vinny's not in the lineup, I don't know. I don't know if we get that same moment, that same opportunity. So him being in the lineup in that regard already helps. But to your point about the bullpen, since September 21st.
It's about what? 2.5 weeks? 3 weeks?
They've given up one earned run.
What?
In almost 40 innings.
Doesn't make any sense. And based on where they were.
Yeah, that's the thing. I know the parts, doesn't make any sense. The parts have changed since May, since July, since August, and so it's not the same bullpen as those months. But all year long, the bullpen was like the Debbie Downer negative story of the year, and oh man, this is going to cost them this. They're not going to be able to get it done.
It wasn't unfair, by the way. No, we weren't making things up. The bullpen was bad.
It was terrible. But now it is a massive strength of this team, and they have five pitchers that they trust and they should trust that throughout now a best of five series coming up in the Bronx and then ultimately in Kansas City. Hopefully the Royals can clinch it, obviously, right in Kansas City next week. But those are the five guys that they're going to roll with. And honestly, unless something weird happens, they really shouldn't have to go much outside of those five. It is Urseg, it's Bubich, it's Schreiber, it's Serpa, it's Sam Long. That's what they rolled
lefties,
with.
A lot of lefties, and then when they need the righties, they tend to go to Schreiber and look other directions. But like I'm going back through. So right now in the playoffs, the Royals are the only team to not allow a run in the bullpen. They got a 0.00 ERA. So that back to September 21st, they haven't allowed one yet. Now it's only been two games. Every other team has allowed at least one run in relief. So like they've given things up. Matter of fact, there have been six home runs hit in this postseason from bullpen teams. There have been 27 walks issued by bullpens in the postseason. Like, there have been problems. There have generally been issues with the bullpen so far in there. And if you go back through, what do you think? You think the Yankees got some badass bullpen? It's good. It's fine. But it was in the last 2 months, it was like league average. Cleveland's a different conversation. They're not playing them, so we don't have to worry about it. But you can go into a series now. The Royals once again have the starting pitching advantage. And I think the Royals have the bullpen advantage. So of the three areas,
there you go.
They are better in two of the three areas now. For a while, we thought it was always going to be one, and we thought they might be disadvantaged in two. Maybe if we're lucky, even. Now the bullpen is treating it like they have two of the three advantages. That feels like a big swing.
913-586-7965. That's the Jay Southland Toast Service text line from the 816. Someone says, hey, when would Brady Brady Singer pitch. Well, if all goes well, he may not have to. And that's something we didn't expect to say. But if you think about the way the off days line up,
they don't actually need him to start.
If things go well and none of the starters have a terrible outing or whatever, you don't have a deep extra inning game or something, you look at the off days. We know Walker is pitching Saturday. We know Cole Reagans is going Monday night in game two. Well, game three is on Wednesday. You can go right back to Lugo. Mm-hmm. All right. So unless he has another short outing, really short outing, then.
And then again, it's on Friday, which means you could go back to again if you needed to.
I mean, there's always weird scenarios that can come up, but they may not need to do that. And that's why you also feel good that because they did not have to get to a game three this afternoon, everything is set up really, really nicely for their rotation and obviously for the bullpen as well.
Bullpen gets 2 days rest.
But it's playoff baseball. Like all of a sudden there could be a game where it goes extras or it turns into a high scoring affair or the Royals starter just doesn't have it that night. And all of a sudden we're having a different conversation about Singer. But right now, why would I believe that's going to be the thing? This pitching staff has shown they're going to be in every game. The question to me is going to be whether or not the offense has any sort of breakout in this series. But the pitching is going to keep the Royals in every single game in this series, and that's what makes them so dangerous and why the Yankees should be really, really, I think, nervous about this matchup.
It used to sound like a threat to be like, well, then they're going to have to go to those other bullpen arms. I'm like, so what? Daniel Lynch hasn't let up an earned run since he came back in relief.
True.
He's been unhittable since he came back to be a reliever. Brady Singer was last in the bullpen in 2022. You know what he was there? Effective. He was a very good reliever in that role. That actually seems to suit him at times, similar to the way it's suited Daniel Lynch. Like, it's not a threat. I can't believe they are seven deep in the bullpen. Like, there are a number of guys I trust. Look, I don't want to see Schreiber every night. I don't maybe want to see Long every night. I wouldn't trust him to get the job done 8 out of 8 times, 10 out of 10 times, but I trust them as much as any other bullpen in Major League Baseball right now. And that is a wild thing to say. Of all of the remaining teams, other than maybe the Guardians, who had the league's best bullpen by a mile, of every other team in the Major League Baseball playoffs, I trust the Royals bullpen as much, if not more, than any other team remaining. And that is a wild notion that I would have never even considered 30 days ago. But it's also why I am more confident in their ability to win this series than I've been. They just finished winning a series 1-0 and 2-1. Like, they couldn't have let up a run and still won. It wasn't even possible. They couldn't even give up one run in game one. They couldn't give up two runs in game two and didn't in either game.
And they're going to go up against the Yankees team that we know across the entire season. Their offense and the power in the lineup is all legit. It's all there. What you hope, though, is the trend continues of not only the Yankees, but typically a lot of teams. If you're relying on the home run ball, by the way, the Orioles were 47% of their runs all year were by the home run. Now, they got one run yesterday from Cedric Mullins on a home run. But if the home run ball is not there, and with the starting pitching the Royals have, you feel like you're not going to give many of those up. It can be a challenge. You also hope that the 8-day layoff or whatever it's going to be for the Yankees by the time we get to Saturday, that's a problem for them. That goes back to the comments from Cody Decker when he joined us yesterday and back in August. Like, that's a team you actually don't mind facing as much because they're so reliant on Aaron Judge hitting those home runs. Don't get me wrong. I'm guessing he will hit a home run at some point, spoiler, in this series.
You think so?
I'll tell you this. If Aaron Judge does not hit a home run in the best of five, the Royals are winning the series. Yes. Do you disagree?
I know they got other guys who can hit a home run,
Juan
too.
Soto.
It's not like Juan Soto stinks. Uh-huh. But, yeah, if Aaron Judge goes the entire series without a home run, I don't assume they're winning three of the five games.
Yeah, and I know tomorrow we're going to talk more specifically just about the matchup with the Yankees. But just to that point, real quick, you and I both saw this today. Career stats against Lugo, Reagans, and Waka. Aaron Judge, 1-for-28.
It's pretty bad.
Juan Soto, 8-for-26, 2 home runs, 307.
That's decent.
You know, but Volpe, 0-for-11. Jazz Chisholm, 1-for-18. Gleyber Torres, 4-for-29.
These are not... That's pretty bad. That's really bad. What the hell happened to Judge in those matchups? He's getting worked over. Now, they faced him twice this year. He saw those guys twice this year. But, I mean, Walker's been around the league forever. So, I mean, certainly he would have seen some of Judge somewhere along the way.
I just love it's the Yankees, too. There's just so many. I understand that when we had Vernon, he's right. Like, if you're 20 years old, you probably don't hate the Yankees as much as someone that's 50 years old or whatever. Like, I still just think it's pretty easy to hate the Yankees. You look at the payroll
market,
it's New York, it's the payroll, East Coast sports fan, it's all of that. Aaron Judge is a likable person. I don't disagree with that.
He is.
He's also great at baseball. And, you know, Juan Soto is fun to watch as well. But it's still the freaking Yankees. I can't stand them. I can't stand the Yankees at all. You look at any other team that's available, AL, NL, the rest of the way, other than the Dodgers. There's not another team alive still in the postseason. That includes the Mets, who are playing the Brewers today, that I despise more.
That's because the Yankees and the Dodgers are the poster child of what is wrong with baseball. Oh, look at us. Do you know the Detroit Tigers active payroll? Do you know what it is?
Only because people have been circulating it. I'll let you go ahead. I'll play along.
$18 million total. Like, that's it. They're paying nobody. The Yankees, however's payroll is $300 million. And so is the Dodgers. They are the poster child for what is wrong with the sport. There is a disparity in resource. Because somebody said, hey, you can't keep saying the Yankees don't matter in the postseason. They played in three of the last seven ALCSs. I'm like, they bought those. And when they had their chance to get in there, they couldn't finish the job. They have not won a World Series in 15 years, and they are what is wrong with baseball. So do I want the Royals, a team with a payroll a little north of $100 million, to take down a team who pays three times that, who has $600 million players on their team, might pay another $600 million player in Juan Soto this offseason? My entire life had $300 million pitchers on their roster. Yeah, I'd like to see them go down. They are the easiest team.
Of course,
to
there's college football teams that have a higher NIL budget than what the Tigers are paying their postseason roster.
Doesn't surprise me. I mean, again, this is what's kind of good. Like, this is the good story about baseball is scrappy teams can still find a way.
That's there
why are
teams the postseason's
who pay a lot of
fun.
Money. Yeah, that is why I like playoff bracket.
I mean, like tonight, the Brewers are playing the Mets, and it's the last wild card game. It's a best of three. It's the deciding game three. The Mets took game one. Brewers won last night. I don't know about you. Just by default, I'm rooting for the Brewers. They're a smaller market team. I'm rooting for them to beat the New York Mets, who have a massive payroll, even though the Mets have been a fun story in the second half of the season. And Lindor, after a terrible first 3 weeks, has been sensational.
They have the highest payroll in baseball, $317 million.
Is that. And I'm always going to root for a team like Milwaukee, like tonight.
Here's how baseball's broken. You know all the teams. Everybody pretty much knows the teams remaining in the baseball playoffs at this point because the Royals are still in it. Mets, number one payroll in baseball. The Yankees, $309 million, number two payroll in baseball. The Astros just got eliminated, third highest payroll. Phillies, still in it, fourth highest payroll. Fifth highest payroll. Dodgers, still in it. Atlanta, sixth highest payroll, still in it. Like, it's a joke. If you have money, you get to keep playing baseball. If you don't, you typically do not get to keep playing baseball. The Royals coming into the season had actually right now after they took on some payroll, the 20th highest payroll. The Brewers 21.
Well, the Yankees and Dodgers have won two titles in 20 years. The Yankees and Dodgers have won two titles in 20 years.
I'm glad when they fall flat on their face. Like, it always but Houston's one of the highest payroll teams, and they're always. I'm saying it gives you a far better chance.
Of course.
It doesn't guarantee you the crown, but it does give you a
way better
chance.
You're right that baseball is the only sport that has these sorts of numbers. Like, you don't see payroll numbers get brought up for one individual player. Like Josh Hader, the guy that technically lost the Astros the game yesterday, makes more money individually than the entire Tigers payroll.
Detroit was 26th this year in payroll. Miami, the Rays, Pittsburgh, and Oakland were the only teams that were worse. So, I mean, they're doing this through grit a lot of times. They still have to spend but a third of what the other teams get to spend. That's nuts. Could you imagine in the NFL if the Chiefs spent $300 million but the Raiders only spent $100? I mean, how could you afford anything? It doesn't even make any sense. It's a bad system. Go Royals. Screw the Yankees, you know?
Royals are underdogs. You're probably not surprised to hear that. The same case in the Orioles series. The Royals are now 14-1 to win the World Series. They were plus 10,000 to win the World Series at the beginning of the season. They're now 4-1 to win the AL. They're plus 190 to win Saturday night. So pretty big dogs. If you want something to feel a little bit better, game-by-game underdogs, overall 39-30 straight up since 2018 in terms of that particular
row.
And game one home favorites, they are 30-17. So game ones, ones where typically, that's why on the flip side, if you can steal game one on the road, like, makes sense, right?
But starts feeling like the series is yours.
You all of a sudden are obviously in a great spot if you're the Royals, knowing that Reagans is pitching game two. I think it's important that Reagans is pitching in Yankee Stadium, given the porch that exists there in right field. I think you absolutely, one way or the other, Reagans had to pitch in New York. And I totally am good with them pitching Monday. I think I was talking with Bob this morning with Dusty, and he wanted him to pitch on Saturday. No.
Three days rest?
Three days rest coming off of cramps? No.
I'm good.
I don't need
Monday's
that. You pitch
fine.
On Monday. Waka also, by the way, Waka's been really, really good. And that dude has plenty of postseason experience.
Tons.
So I'm not worried about the stage and being in New York and everything that, because you know it's going to be an insane atmosphere in New York as well on Saturday. All right, coming up next, we'll get back to the Chiefs for a little bit with Danan Hughes. He, of course, is on the call Monday night right here on 96.5 The Fan with Mitch and Josh Klingler as the Chiefs take on the Saints. We'll ask Danan about the wide receiver room now, where it's at with Rashee Rice not being part of the picture, and what he sees from New Orleans offense, who is still the best points per game offense in football.